Okay.
Well, I'm actually getting video.
Well, I am.
That's crazy.
Oh, is that better?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You're back to just looking like your picture, which is fine.
I have to admit, I feel like I just saw the wizard behind the curtain.
You did. Pay no attention to the mark behind the curtain.
It was the night before Christmas, and in the Lobot Lounge, the gentlemen were gathering, toy memories to scrounge. For toys of imagination and wonder behold, for each toy has a tale to be told. So gather round the table and lend us an ear, as we talk of Christmas memories of today and yesteryear. There are presents under the tree for Mark Finn.
I got a Sam Cobra!
And Mickey Finn.
I got a really, really large Torx screen for my computer.
And Aaron DiOrive.
Oh my god, I have been looking for so long for a vintage in-box Micronauts Baron Karza figure.
And for me, well, my joy is just giving. Oh no, wait, that's mine, that Mego Mad Monsters castle. I'll take it. Thank you.
Nice.
Welcome aboard, ladies and gentlemen. The gentlemen nerds are gathered for a special Christmas episode where we're going to share some wonderful Christmas memories of the toys that made us so happy when we were young, and the memories of them keep us young today.
I like this topic.
Yes,
I'm a fan of this topic. Yep.
Absolutely.
So let's go ahead and dive right in. I've got the Christmas spirit. It's oozing out of every pore in my body. I would just want to bring up the idea that myself, I grew up with an older brother, 2 years my senior. So I had a great playmate. We had these fantastic memories of the 70s toys. We'll go into detail in just a bit. And then in the 80s, I had a younger brother who had all his 80s toys. So I kind of had a resurgence of toys through the 80s. So I kind of have a very broad knowledge base on some of these fantasy toys. And we're talking, I guess, nerd toys would be a good way to describe them. Toys that remind us of favorite movies, TV shows, cartoons.
Absolutely.
Properties that we all know. If you were to mention, say, He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, we'd go, yep, I know what that is. So, Aaron, let's start with you. If you have any just beautiful memories of Christmas morning.
I do, actually. I was a huge fan growing up of the various Aurora model kits, particularly the monster model kits. At some point, I basically owned all of them, Dracula, the Wolfman, Frankenstein, et cetera, et cetera. And then at some point, I don't even remember how my parents started finding these, I started getting the Toho monster kits. With King Ghidorah and Godzilla and Rodan. And I don't remember if they were ordering it off like a Sears catalog or something, but I have wonderful memories of getting those kits, opening them up, and then just, I couldn't wait to just sit at the table with my glue that I did not sniff and just start assembling those monster kits. I was very, very fond. Many were the battles between my plastic Godzilla and my Rodan, and they would clash, and of course pieces would break off here and there, and I'd be like, darn it! And so my glue would be applied, and I'd put the fin back, or the toe, or whatever it was that got chipped off. But yeah, a huge fan. I was a huge fan of, and the ships, all the Klingon ship, the Enterprise. There was one called the UFO. If you all remember that one,
I
had the little ship inside of it that would come out. I mean, all those model kits. I was a huge fan of.
Those are great. Yep, I had a few of those, but I never got all of them. I always coveted the action scene kits. Yeah. That you pull a lever and the guillotine works.
Yeah. I remember, yes.
Yeah. Funny Aurora story I'll share. Had them all, loved them all. The Wolfman, for some reason, was my absolute favorite, and I must have gotten that kit over and over and over again for some reason. I don't know if I would break them or what, but I remember buying multiple copies of it. my mother would paint them. She was amazing. She had amazing talent. We'd gather around her in this little TV tray and watch her put these together and paint them. We did them as well, but she was really good. So she was putting together the Hunchback of Notre Dame, and she couldn't figure out why the ropes wouldn't reach his hands. And she was like, I think this model kit's defective. The rope doesn't go all the way. See, it doesn't go all the way to the hands. And we're like, Mom, I think something's wrong. I think he needs to be turned. No, I know what I'm doing. No, I don't know. That's right. Look at the picture and look at who he looks. No, I don't. She had put his torso backward. So he was the hunch front of Notre Dame. So he was in this very dramatic pose. Like,
oh, that's genius.
Backwards with his arms out and the painful face and had the hunch front.
No wonder he looked like that.
Yeah.
And hence He-Man was born.
Yes.
That is absolutely. By the way, I for the record, I want to say Joseph's mom sounds like an absolute gem and an angel, and I wish I had had a mom like that growing up. That was just so into my hobbies and such. So,
yeah,
I'm very, very jealous, Joseph. But she sounds amazing.
Yeah, she was very supportive of it, we were very blessed, and still are. She's still around.
Yes. Yay. So, Mickey, anything?
I have little Irish fingers, meaning that, you know, I am the last person.
That toy?
I am the last person you want me to perform brain surgery on you.
okay. I thought little Irish fingers were a brand of toy.
No.
Tip them back. Watch them drink. I'm so sorry. I'd like to apologize to all my brothers and sisters on the Emerald Isle.
Please send all hate mail to Mark Finn. Yes.
Bear in mind, a person named Finn made that joke.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
So, I can't build models. I can't paint minis. So friends that have minis and stuff like that, I sort of live vicariously through. And yeah. any models had to come pre-assembled, like, you know, the Japanese metal full die-cast.
Yeah,
you know, BattleTech, VF, whatever, things like that. So I'm sort of in awe of anybody that could actually do that stuff.
Now,
so, I mean, but like today, like if you were to walk into a hobby store or a toy store, what draws your eye? Like, what kind of a toy are you attracted to now? Do you see and say, wow, I wish I'd had that when I was a kid?
This is not a politically correct answer.
Okay.
I have always loved fake science fiction-esque, and some of the cooler real-life fake guns. Not real guns. I don't want a real gun.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
The airsofts, the Belgian arms that look like, you know, science fiction things that they used to do in Stargate and all that, the Mauser.
Those are beautiful models. Yeah. I mean, they do some beautiful work on those.
And so, like, I used to have a Mauser model that was fully, you could strip it down, it had bullets in it.
Wow.
I painted them silver just because, but
right. you were a werewolf hunter.
Yes. So basically, this was stuff that would get you shot these days. But and I still on my over by the movie collection with the Dalek and the minion sticking out of the Dalek and all the other stuff that I've got is a Mauser and a Blade Runner style gun. I want the Hellboy model.
Yeah,
Samaritan. The one.
You know what? That comes up every now and then on my Facebook for some reason. I think I've actually liked a few groups that build models like that. And you can find it fairly reasonably priced these days. Hellboy's gun.
Yeah, the Samaritan.
And it looks amazing. Yeah, the Samaritan. And you can get it for like $50 or something like that. I mean, it might be like a raw model that comes in pieces that you would have to assemble.
Yeah, it's
probably that thing's so big, I could probably actually do that.
They have kits. They have kits for that. But by the way, and it's funny that you mentioned that because I have always also, since I was a tiny, tiny little tyke, loved sci-fi weapons from all the shows that I used to watch. I remember buying it looks like a staple gun, you know, the laser from Space 1999.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
I had it, and it looked just like a staple gun, and it made that annoying noise that all of them made back then, that that's all it
the
did.
The gears, the grind, yeah.
Yes, but that I bought that. I had every version of the Star Trek phaser from various kits and such. I think I had a Klingon Disruptor. I had one of the guns from Forbidden Planet.
Mm-hmm.
I was crazy, like you, Mickey. I was crazy about guns, weapons from specifically from sci-fi shows.
And it's got to be something to do with mechanics because it's not, you know, it's not a love of them in real life. It's just something like engineering. No. It's like you like, you know, architects, if you're not an architect, but you still appreciate the building, you know.
That's right. That's right.
Right.
That makes sense.
I love the, I had the Star Wars laser rifle.
Yeah.
And that was another one of the ones where they had a gear system inside. But, and I kept that for years. And you know, that's that was back at a time when the whole thing was painted black. And, and it looked like,
yeah.
Well, because it was modified, you know, Soviet weaponry.
Right.
I'll tell you what I didn't, what they never made that I wanted was the guns from the Black Hole. I mean, it's a terrible movie, but I loved the guns from the Black Hole.
They reminded me of Star-Lord's gun. They were like two barrels, right?
Yeah, it was just like Star-Lord's gun. That's right.
Yeah. That's right.
Yep.
Okay, so Christmas morning, some era of this, some year in the 70s, I can't remember exactly when, but gentlemen, I'm gonna throw a word out here,
right.
and you guys will know. Ladies and gentlemen, Maskatron.
Oh, wow, yeah.
All right.
$6 Million Man was one of the first things that I was really into. And so, you know, Kenner made a really fun line of those toys. They weren't the... you know, my apex, my go-to model for what I consider an action figure to be was always G.I. Joe in terms of poseability.
Yeah.
But sure. But Steve Austin
Kung
made
Fu
up
grip.
For it. Yes, the Kung Fu grip. But Steve Austin made up for it by having the telescoping eye, by having the arm that you could ratchet up by degrees, by having the skin that rolled back.
Rolled them up. But Maskatron took that to a whole new
yes.
level.
Now, I'm actually Austin not familiar with – what is that? I'm
right,
not familiar with Maskatron.
Okay, in the $6 Million Man TV show, Steve Austin would battle robots made by Dr. Dolnins. And these were robots that he would use to commit crimes and get paid for. But, of course, OSI and Oscar Goldman and Steve Austin would stop him all the time.
Right.
So Kenner said, well, we got to make a villain for our $6 Million Man toy. So they took that robot from that episode of The Robot Maker, and they made a character called Maskatron. Now, people were like, oh, Maskatron wasn't in the show. Yeah, technically he was. He was just multiples of him, if you want to go there. So Maskatron, in the very first episode, was played by John Saxon. John Saxon has this battle with Lee Majors at the end. It's tremendous. If you guys find it on YouTube, watch it. It's just one of the best TV fights ever between the $6 Million Man and a friggin' robot. Maskatron the toy was brilliant because he wore masks. You can disguise him. You could pull his face off and put on Steve Austin's face or Oscar Goldman's face or John Saxon's face.
Yeah,
it was
John
a little
Saxon's
John Saxon.
Face,
So underneath were these circuitry and this open silver face, and he had these great clear plastic inserts on his chest that would look awesome when you held him up to the light. And best of all, his limbs would fire off, spring-loaded with buttons, hidden buttons on his body. His arms would shoot off, his legs would shoot off, his head would shoot off if Steve Austin hit him just right. Now, this is all beautiful, and he comes – oh, interchangeable hands. He had a claw hand.
A suction
and he had,
hand.
Yeah, it looked like a toilet plunger on the end of a rope. I'm not sure what that was for, but he had one. So my brother and I would not only just play with these things, we'd have adventures. They were grand adventures, and we came up with some amazing plots and very intricate. We were very, very into it. So here's our play with $6 Million Man. Maskatron was disguised as Oscar Goldman. He was pacing back and forth in our living room, sending Steve on some bogus mission. Steve didn't know it was Oscar, for heaven's sake. So we're carrying on, really just playing the roles, right? Suddenly, and without warning, Oscar Goldman's arm fires off. Pow! And there's a brief moment of quiet where my brother and I look at each other. We look at the arm on the ground. We look at the now armless Oscar Goldman. And Steve Austin just starts punching on him because, you know, the game's up. There was no argument. It was just, okay, let's do this.
And now I'm
get him!
Now I'm picturing Robot Chicken, but instead of punching him, they just have this awkward conversation.
Right.
Well, Steve, it's this war wound, isn't it?
Wow, no, my God, I remember the Steve Austin action figure, but I missed this glorious thing called Maskatron.
Yeah, I still have a Maskatron.
Wow.
Did anybody use Chewbacca as Bigfoot for...
No, I didn't sub him out. I had my own Bigfoot. Oh, yeah.
You actually, so they had an actual Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. Awesome.
Yep.
That's amazing. That's a great story.
It is.
And Joseph, you know, you and I have talked in passing about this. I do actually think that we are Earth 1 and Earth 2 counterparts of one another, because I had I was an only child until I was about 10, and then I suddenly got a younger brother and sister. And so I had supportive parents, but they knew I was a weird kid. You know, there was no hiding it. You know, maybe he'll grow up to play football. No, that's not going to happen. Not really. So they were very supportive, but they were also very pragmatic. And so whenever I would get they sprung for example, the Star Trek bridge set for the Migos.
Nice.
But they didn't want to spend the money on the Planet of the Apes stuff. I don't know why. They gave me the full slate of the Planet of the Apes figures. So what my mother did is she and my father built a playground setting out of actual wood, and they made ladders, and they made rope bridges, and it was
wow.
all, yeah, so it was all like tactile stuff, you know.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I know, it's very cool. And so, you know, the transition from Migos to G.I. Joes to Steve Austin, and then back down the scale to Star Wars figures and Micronauts. You mentioned Baron Karza, Aaron, and of course,
he was my pride and joy.
Yeah,
Micronauts were just
amazing, you know. And so, they were very diligent about all that stuff, but the one toy that I look at as the thing that they said, okay, we've got a weird kid. They got me, and Joseph, you're going to know what this is if the other two don't. Hugo, the Man of a Thousand Faces.
Yes, invented by Alan Arby.
That's right. I actually know Hugo.
Oh, good.
Oh, that was a frightening thing.
Yeah.
And by the way, I had a Stretch Armstrong, just to put that out there.
Okay.
I had a Stretch Armstrong and whatever the green monster was.
Stretch Monster.
Yep, I had him too.
So I had a Hugo doll, which is, you know, which was really kind of a creepy doll. You know, he's bald and no eyebrows, but then you're supposed to stick the eyebrows on. They say a thousand faces. I'm pretty sure I did 998 of them.
And now I'm picturing a robot chicken where it's Mr. Potato Head versus him in a boxing ring.
Yes.
And they're pulling parts off.
By the way, and I was multicultural here. I also was bought toys from across the border. We lived in Brownsville, so my stepfather would go over and into Matamoros, Mexico. And he'd come back with those really cheaply made...
The knockoffs?
There were knockoffs. What they were is they were the luchadors.
Oh, yes.
That were very popular at that time.
Oh, El
Santo, Blue Demon,
yeah.
Mil Máscaras, El Rayo de Jalisco.
Those guys.
And so I have Baron Karza in one hand and this horribly made Santo in the other, and you know they're fighting each other, and of course I'm torn because I love El Santo. El Santo always wins, but this is Baron Karza.
Right.
This guy can fire his fist from his arm.
Okay. Karza was the stuff of legend. Truly, when we obviously had Micronauts as well, and Baron Karza again, my brother James and I playing in the living room, elaborate thing. The Micronauts were pinned down. Karza and the Courtiers had them pinned down. They were firing stuff at them. I mean, back in the day when you could shoot little projectiles at each other and not eat them and not choke and die. I think the kids were smarter in the 70s. Anyway, that's not politically correct. So I had a time traveler of some kind. I think it was a time traveler. He was going to dash across to the base and maybe get on a weapon because Karza had his pinned down. And I literally took this little man and I physically ran him across the living room. And James, on the other side of the living room with Karza, was aiming with a fist. And fired that fist in a beautiful arc, a perfect arc that landed right on this little time traveler. Just hit him perfectly. And it's over. We stopped.
Yeah,
it's over.
And again, you had to honor the play, right?
We honored the play. I pressed that son of a gun down into the carpet. I was like, well, he's dead. Pressing him down there. And I swear, after we finished playing, we picked up everyone. We left that little guy there, just pressed into the carpet. He was pegged across the living room by Baron Karza.
Oh. That is awesome. Now, I also had Force Commander. And the way I would mix them up and make it an interesting play is that I would interchange their body parts. So suddenly now, Force Commander's head is on Karza's body, and he's confused as hell. Right? He's like, I'm a good guy, but I want to do horrible things all of a sudden. I don't understand.
Ebony,
I love the those were two of the figures that I never got from the Micronauts. I got everything else. My parents got me Mega City and Rocket Tubes, but for some reason the guys who could turn into like battle centaurs somehow escaped their attention, and I don't know what they were thinking.
Gosh.
You know. But yeah, those were fun. Now, do any of you? I don't know if you were. You'd had to been really plugged into this. The Marx action figures, the Johnny West action figures.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mentioned Sam Cobra at the top of the show. Sam Cobra was the villain. And one of the best things about the West action figures that Marx did is the number of accessories you got. And Sam Cobra had I loved Sam Cobra. I for some reason I always thought that Johnny West was John Wayne, and so as a kid I called him my John Wayne action figure because they just I guess facially looked a lot alike. When I got Sam Cobra, I stopped playing with that altogether because Sam had. He came with a carpetbagger's case that had dynamite in it, that had a derringer. He had a sword that turned into a sword cane. He has his belt buckle became a knife. This is
Wild West.
Oh my god, yeah, crazy amount of stuff. And all like sneaky gambler, medicine man, you know, self defense weaponry kind of stuff. And I just adored running him up against everybody that I could, you know, put him up against, you know. I did a lot of time travel with my stuff because, you know, when you have G.I. Joes who are basically military or, you know, adventure guys, mm-hmm. you've got some Western figures over here, you've got the Planet of the Apes, and I invented a reason why they were smaller. You know, mm-hmm. you had to work all that stuff out because,
well,
you know,
time travel makes people grow and shrink and...
Yeah. Well, I pretended that they were evolving back down along the chain.
evolution.
So yeah, they were devolving back into apes. Yeah, so
like altered states.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I had a Lone Ranger figure that really I only got him because I thought I could, you know, he might fit in with my G.I. Joes, but he was smaller, and so I tried to put the clothes from the G.I. Joes onto the Lone Ranger, and he always looked like, you know, like a kid trying to wear his dad's clothes. And so yeah, I was like, oh god, this doesn't look good. What am I gonna do? And so yeah, so there was the Lone Ranger who was never the Lone Ranger, by the way, when I played with him. He was another G.I. Joe, but he was little G.I. Joe with the rolled up cuffs and the rolled up sleeve.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no.
Exactly.
Little Joe, come on, let's go.
The original short round.
That's great. Yeah, the original short round.
And there was always a danger, for at least in my family, my father, who's Greek. And you know, growing up, you know, he absolutely would give us what we wanted. He was a very indulgent father, but he often wondered why we chose what we chose, why certain things, you know, to him, I think it just struck him as odd. For example, G.I. Joe, the 12-inch G.I. Joe, as articulated and guns and everything, to him it was still a doll because it had clothes that could come on and off and little shoes. It was like a doll. So he would often say in his Greek accent, pick up your doll. Don't leave your doll laying around. I'm like, it's not a doll. It's an action figure.
Right.
Dolls are for girls.
That's
action
right.
figures are for – and the Migos were no better.
No.
Because they had little cloth, you know, clothes and jackets and satchels. The Green Goblin had a freaking purse. I mean, it's not a doll, Dad. Is this your purse for your doll? No, Dad, it's not a purse for my doll. It's a satchel for the Green Goblin.
It is a figure of action.
Bombs. He's got pumpkin bombs in there. Come
you
on.
You can't explain it to him. Yeah, there's just...
No, you can't. You just kind of go, okay, give me my doll.
Yeah.
My doll, thank you.
And I think it's only the fact that I loved all the Aurora monster models that my parents weren't worried. They're like, oh, no, he likes all the creepy, scary monster stuff. He's fine.
Yeah.
You mentioned G.I. Joe, and you know that the G.I. Joe went through some transitions over the years, and they kind of moved away from military in the 70s and made the Adventure Team. You mentioned that.
Oh, yeah, I love that stuff.
Yeah, the Adventure Team was kind of fun because they had, you know, the intruders. The enemy were the intruders, these Neanderthal-looking space cavemen,
that's right.
For lack of a better description. They were two of them. They were like twins. Oh. One had brown hair. They had no pupils. They had white eyes, no pupils.
Nice.
Brown hair in one, and the other one had black hair and a beard.
Yep.
And they wore like metal armor, and their arms were akimbo, I guess, or no, they were out. They were like out. And you could push a button in their back, and their arms would grasp.
Yes.
You know, they would grasp. And I still remember the TV spot for that, because it had a little jingle.
Yes.
It said, the intruder is the enemy. G.I. Joe.
Yep.
Wow.
Oh, my
God.
Your mission is to go find that so we can post that on the website.
That was the same release that gave us Bullet Man and Mike Power the Atomic Man. And
the human bullet.
Those were a lot of fun. I'll tell you where my parents did get worried, and that was because Big Jim action figures were also quite the rage. Now, of course, initially it was designed as a sports line. What was significant about Big Jim, for those of you under the age of 50, the line had a hard plastic. The characters were about 8 inches tall. They had a hard plastic body, but they had rubberized arms, and it was not quite the same as the roll-up skin from $6 Million Man. They had an internal structure underneath them so that when you bent the arms, the bicep would pop up. They were like basically giant. They were tanned, smiling muscle men. And when you push the button in the back, they made a karate chop. And if you push the button really fast, the arm would go up and down really fast. Now,
as episodes go on, this is becoming my catchphrase. That's not creepy at all.
Let me just say, you know, now the sports stuff didn't interest me so much as whenever they did an action line for him as well. The reason why I liked the Big Jim stuff was because the animals in the action line were way better than the G.I. Joe animals in the action line. One of the action team missions is to find the pygmy gorilla for G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a white gorilla. It is molded together. It's basically kind of anatomically accurate in terms of size, but it's standing up with its arms molded to its chest. There's no movement, no nothing, and you find him and then you put him in the cage and that's it. And then as gorillas go, you know, such a fan. However, Big Jim's gorilla was the size of Big Jim, posed in an action manner, and had a dial on the back of his on his back that connected to the arms, and the arms would brachiate in an oval backwards and forwards whenever you move the dial. And of course, he was in a snarling pose. Now, this is obviously not in keeping with actual primatology, but I needed a bad guy for Big Jim, and that gorilla was great. The crocodile had a wheel on his belly so that when you move the crocodile on the ground, his tail would thrash back and forth, and his head would move in the opposite direction.
Now you know, Mark, but the gorilla that that wasn't a gorilla, right? That's what's described in some circles as a bear. That's what he was for Big Jim.
Yeah.
Big Jim and his hairy companion.
Big Jim was Mattel's answer to G.I. Joe, wasn't it?
I'm sorry?
Wasn't Big Jim Mattel's answer to G.I. Joe?
Yes, that was their pitch. And Big Jim had friends. He had Big Josh. Yeah. I kid you not, the blonde Big Josh. Yeah. I'm telling you, I go back and look at it now, and I
want these toys now. I just do. I want
the
toys.
They're so good. Well, the last gasp of the Big Jim line was when they tried to remake him as sort of an espionage superhero. And so they took some older concepts and repackaged them and called them Big Jim's Wolf Pack. And,
the wolf pack, yeah.
Nice.
And
had Lash and the dude with the metal hand,
yes,
right?
Dr. Steel. Yeah, there were a lot of copycats about those guys. Those were all Big Jim action figures, and they were very cool for what they were. Again, they had a lot of accessories. They did very cool. Like the martial arts expert was Dr. Steel, and he had a dragon tattoo on his chest, and he was bald, and one hand was silver. And that's we're into Bruce Lee territory for this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no, it's almost going into G.I. Joe Cobra.
Yeah,
if I could bring it back to Mattel, because Mattel, when they launched their He-Man and the Masters of the Universe line in the 80s, they dug into Big Jim and pulled things from there. I would say that Dr. Steel was recreated as Fisto in the Masters of the Universe line with that big giant metal fist he had.
Yeah, that's not creepy.
Right. And even the gorilla you described, Mark, was originally a prototype for a He-Man villain that never made it to the shelves, but they used the same mold and the same gorilla, but they painted him white, and he had like armor. They put armor on.
Oh wow! Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
But he never made it out.
Cool.
But that was they were going back in time and saying, well, we got all these molds.
It's interesting that they kept the muscle man thing too. But if you eBay some Big Jim stuff, you'll find that the pack stuff is interesting because all the comics and the design work were done by Jack Kirby.
Yes.
So that's so in terms of like how they set all that stuff up, that was really cool. And as and about as masculine as you'll ever see see the Big Jim stuff being. All the rest of it is camping adventures and ski trips, mm-hmm. and the karate dojo. And the weekend cabin. I mean, there's a fishing set.
The hot tub place.
Yes, Big Jim and Big Josh get in their Winnebago and go fishing, and there's nothing wrong with that. So.
Oh no.
Now, were you all reading when I was collecting the Micronauts? I was also reading the Michael Golden drawn Micronauts comic from Marvel Comics, and that was a great companion. I mean, I remember. I actually came to toys first, and I bought a bunch of those, and then wandering through a department store, some 7-Eleven or something, little convenience store, I saw one of them in the comics rack. For those of you again who are under 40 or 50, comics used to be placed in these racks in convenience stores. And that's how you would go and pick your comics before there were such things as comic book stores. And
how are they done where you are? Because they're still done that way in Houston.
Oh, are they?
Yes.
No, I have not seen a comic rack in Austin in, I would say, 15, 20 years?
Like a traditional rack that circles
around? Yeah, like that spins around.
Oh, the spinning rack, rather than a wooden rack. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. A spinning iron or metal comics rack. That you would pull that stuff.
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, it's a comic book store, but I think they still have them in a couple of special places. I was thinking at Toys R Us, they've got a whole section of comics that's on just a wooden shelf.
Yes. Oh yeah, yeah, no, it's not a rack. Yeah. They have them on shelves, but yes, the little rope, the spinny things. I used to love those things.
I was I was always mad about the comic. Well, I love the comic because I love Michael Golden. And Bill Mantlo was great, but I always wanted the Bug action figure.
Bug
is my favorite character for Micronauts.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And we never got the Bug figure.
No, he was amazing.
That was Marvel putting their fingerprint on it so mm-hmm. that they could, you know, come back and own a piece of it.
My good buddy Chris Andrews went to a convention. This was years and years ago, probably in the 80s. And Michael Golden was there, and he didn't have very much money, and he's like, I want a drawing from you. You know, he scraped all his pennies together, and he got enough for a quick pencil sketch of Bug's head, which he has kept and has to this day, and I covet that drawing. I mean, Bug's character. He's a fantastic character.
The Micronauts in general, the toy line, they were very unique. I mean, they came in all kinds of different variations. My favorite was the Space Glider, because he was die-cast metal. He had that nice... cool to the touch metal body and his white plastic hands that would slip onto the end of those metal wrists. Then he came in different colors, and he had that great jetpack that you'd hit and the little wings would pop up. But he had weight. He had weight to it, you know? And the other ones that were just all plastic, but they were those really cool clear plastic with the vacuum-formed silver heads.
Yeah.
And kids, you're listening at home, the Micronauts, just Google them. And check them out. You won't find them anywhere. I mean, they just don't exist except in a very expensive eBay sale. But look at them and envy us, because we played with these things. We actually played with them.
I found a complete Baron Karza at the Citywide Garage sale several years ago, and the guy wanted $500 for it. It was a little too rich for my blood.
Yeah.
But I was sorely tempted.
Complete?
Yes, inbox complete.
The great styrofoam box.
Oh, yes, I was so tempted. Now, I think they did a re-release.
There was a re-release a few years ago.
Yeah.
That was all limited edition stuff. If you didn't get it, you still didn't get it, you know.
Yeah.
I was able to kind of make the sort of nascent connection between the die-cast Shogun Warriors that were slipping out at this time. Mm-hmm. Raideen, you know, was die-cast, and so was the Acroyer, and Bazinga.
Yeah.
And so I was, you know, I was trying to put this together, and of course, I didn't realize at the time, I kind of knew that the Shogun Warriors were not from around here. But as far as I knew about Micronauts, somebody came up with that, and it was an American toy, and it didn't occur to me. And so it was putting that together and realizing that some of the interchangeability of the Micronauts, you know, the battle cruiser and the way you can put some of the stuff back together again, resembled sort of the transforming idea that was really fun to make that connection as a teenager when I started going to conventions and realizing that all this stuff has deeper roots than just our exposure to it, which is nice. You know, it's nice to know that there's more to the story. You know, it was like a new chapter of Micronauts for me.
Right.
Did you all ever have, speaking of the Shogun Wars, did you all ever own like the big 25 inch or however tall they were?
Mm-hmm. All three of them.
Me too. I loved those.
The shooting fist and rolling feet.
That's
right. Yeah. No, they were awesome. These big, tall, towering Shogun warriors.
I never got any of those. And
really?
I wanted them so. Those still are on my at the top. If you make me do my toys I regret not ever owning, top of the list is Shogun Warriors.
The perfect thing to get, Mark, would be a 25-inch Shogun Warrior modded to a gorilla.
Just give me the Godzilla. You know, I love that Godzilla toy. I had friends who had him. You know, and because the thing about it, I immediately saw the appeal of Godzilla. Finally, here's something that if you put it in scale with the Micronauts, you know, this Godzilla can actually stomp on stuff. Oh my God!
Yeah. The Shogun Warriors brings back a memory that's not Christmas per se, but my father used to have the wonderful habit every other week he would say to my brother and I Saturday morning as we're watching cartoons, after you're finished with cartoons, come on, we're going to get into the car, we're going to go to the toy store and you pick anything you want.
Oh, wow.
That was our treat.
Okay, I covet all of Joseph's family.
So that's where the Shogun Warriors came. My brother and I went to Toys R Us. We ran to the aisle. We both picked out a Shogun Warrior. And I remember that smell. They had that rubberized plastic smell.
The vinyl, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we stood at the end of the hallway. I picked Raideen. He picked Mazinga. And we would just fire at each other, just shoot our missiles and fists, shooting back and forth across the hallway.
Nice.
Just good stuff. Here's an odd one. I used to have an action figure called Pulsar, the ultimate man of adventure.
I think I remember him too.
Pulsar, but I remember it. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't own him, but I remember the commercials.
So Pulsar was unique. He had a black and red jumpsuit. He had white James Colburn style hair, and his thing was you could open his shirt and see his inside, see his heart, his lungs, his intestines. You could hit a button in his back and watch blood pump and his heart beat inside his chest. His face would lift off to reveal his brain, where you would stick his mission disc in his brain.
I've seen that. I never knew what it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I've seen him.
Just the oddest concept of a hero who's got a glass chest? That's horrible.
That is awesome. That is
one
awesome.
One punch and he's done.
I just assumed it was kind of, you know, the Invisible Man model, or the Visible Man model kit.
Right.
Writ large, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it was interesting because there was this, I feel like we had this really golden opportunity. Some of the stuff was connected to other things. You know, there were the media tie-ins. $6 Million Man, of course, immediately comes to mind. Obviously, Star Wars. But then all the other companies had their own line with varying degrees of success. We've talked about you know, upwards of 10, almost 12 here, that were full lines that were supported, that had this wonderful thing. Then there's this period in the 80s when all of a sudden it was the only stuff you could find were things that had a cartoon connected to them.
Yeah.
And the cartoons became giant 30-minute ads for this. Now, my little brother, who I acquired, was 7 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was – so I was too old for Masters of the Universe, the TV show, the cartoons.
Yeah.
But Castle Grayskull – was still pretty sexy.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, there was some, you know, they weren't all bad, but it felt like I felt, you know, like for my little brother, like, yeah, you kind of missed out on some stuff.
Yeah. But I mean, you again, we're separated by Earth 1 and Earth 2, because my younger brother was Masters of the Universe, G.I. Joe, Real American Hero, Transformers. Those were his toy lines. And James and I, my older brother, we would play with him. We introduced to him the concept of rolling a 20-sided dice to simulate battles and hits and misses and things like that, because, of course, we were big Dungeons & Dragons geeks.
Sure.
So we brought in the 20-sided dice, and to this day, my son, when we play Clone Wars and we play, whenever we, you know, toys he has, we use the 20-sided dice just because it's fair. And there's no argument. Did you hit him? Yep. Did you miss him? Yep. you know?
Cool.
And there's tiered structure of powers. I mean, Skeletor is more powerful than Man-at-Arms. Skeletor gets 4 attacks. Man-at-Arms just gets 2.
Right.
And when he got even more complex, Merman would get 2 attacks unless he was underwater, then he got 3 attacks because he's underwater.
Right.
I mean, they were very complex. I mean, they weren't... And, of course, I me being, you know, the actor, I would love to emulate the voices from the cartoon. Alan Oppenheimer's Skeletor and Merman and Beastman. So we would bring these to life as much as we could for my younger brother, George. And just had these amazing adventures, just, you know, absolutely spanning the backyard. Because Masters of the Universe, they were sturdy. You could pound the crap out of each other.
Yes.
Masters of the Universe dolls. They were just, you know, amazing bodybuilder monsters that were sitting there tossing rocks at each other.
Yeah, likewise. I have two younger brothers that are separate. Yes. I have two younger brothers who are separated by quite a few years. And, they grew up with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Right.
And so that they had all of those toys, which, again, you know, I was in college already, and I was reading the comic. But I missed out on all that. The Transformers, and which is why my brother to this day is a big fan of the Transformer movies. I think they're okay. He loves the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies. I think they're okay. But, you know, those were his toys.
Yeah.
Those were his Micronauts. And,
And there's something to be said for that, just opening that imagination, and that's what it's all about. I mean, these toys were creative. Yes, even in the 80s when they were basically just being sold to you every Saturday and every weekday after school, as commercials, but they were still imaginative. I mean, they would set you on the path. You know what He-Man is. You know what Cobra Commander is. You know what Duke is. You know what Scarlet is. You know who these characters are. And you've got the archetypes, and then you can have your own adventures. You could recreate the adventures that you saw on TV, but what fun is that? Take them on brand new adventures.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where the imagination starts to roll.
Yeah.
I remember we built a temple for Masters of the Universe for George. We bought Fisto and his arch enemy Jitsu, who was his opposite, the karate guy with a big golden hand for karate chops. And we built this temple out of bricks. We were building a driveway. We had all these bricks. And we put them all inside the garage and made this gigantic, almost Aztec-style temple in the garage for the Masters of the Universe. And that's how Jitsu and Fisto came into the play. They were introduced fighting over this temple or protecting this magic temple or something like that. But anyway, it was just the opportunity to be creative and let your imaginations blow the doors off of the world and go, this is cool, you know. And
by the way, I do blame/credit role-playing games. The they were responsible for pretty much pulling me away from sort of playing with toys. And my early 80s, mid-80s just became obsessively about Dungeons & Dragons and Traveler and Champions and Villains and Vigilantes. I mean, that's it. All my money went to buy supplements and game box games and rules and dice. And that's it. That's it.
Do you remember the LJN Dungeons & Dragons toy line?
Yes, I never owned any of the, and I remember the cartoon, of course, with Game Master and such, but yes, I actually do remember those. And then they have Tiamat, like with like a gold dragon.
Yeah, they had a hook horror, they had a carrion crawler, they had a War Duke was the evil warrior, and Strongheart was the paladin hero, and Mercion was the female cleric, and they had a dwarf and wizards, and I had all of those. And the playset, they had a great Fortress of Fang playset with a lava river. And of course, you know, we're talking about in the 80s, you know, so I was still getting them. I mean, I still wanted them and still appreciated them. It wasn't
buy miniatures for the games. So that sort of became the new, you know, we were all into painting our little lead miniatures and such from Ralpartha and Grenadier and such. But I actually the toys disappeared for me. I had a huge toy box that went to my brothers, and you know, I lament because I had all the Star Wars toys. I know we want to limit or talk about Star Wars, but I had every single Star Wars toy that came out, and it was all in a big toy box. And my brothers, you know, bless their little hearts, destroyed them. But
did you do Warhammer?
Warhammer? You mean figures? No, never got into Warhammer.
I've got a friend that just does tons and tons of minis. It's scary how detailed he gets. And, of course, there's a rule, if you don't know, there's a rule in Warhammer that if you paint the orcs' stuff red, they get an extra turn because the orcs believe that red ones go faster.
Wow. Okay.
I didn't know that.
There's your rule structure again.
But,
you know?
I never got
to. But see, those things, you know, to me, those where the minis sit for me, even now, is the Army Men kind of vibe, you know? I loved Army Men growing up as well, you know?
I had Army Men.
And anytime I found, like, the Plastic Marx figures that were something other than just the regular Army Men, that was always the coolest thing in the world, you know?
Mark, did you have, because I remember they had packets of, and this was after, you know, sort of the heyday of the Army Men, maybe a few years after, but they started having, like, they had Phoenician warriors, they had Greek hoplites,
yes.
They had, okay, yeah, that's because of my, at that point, my burgeoning interest in fantasy and later on role-playing games. That's what I started to collect more than just Army Men. I got all of the historical, the Romans, the Greek hoplites, the medieval knights, that those are the little plastic figures that I collected.
Yeah, the I was always like, I loved the pirates and the cowboys, you know, that was,
yes, yes,
all the genre stuff. And in fact, I guess it was probably 15 years ago when they were remaking, some collectors decided they wanted to redo the Marx toy lines by recasting some of the figures. And so I bought the Cutthroat Island playset that I didn't have as a kid and always wanted because, you know, they would show it in the catalog, in the Sears Christmas catalog. And who doesn't remember going through that with a giant marker just circling everything on the back page, you know?
This one and this one and this one and this one and this one.
But for some reason, they never got me that. And so I scratched the niche as an adult and bought it. And I never really got over action figures. I love them to this day. And the only thing that...
You mean doll?
Yeah.
Figures of action. I love them. I still collect them now.
Yeah, well, and I'll buy the occasional one, but I really, every time I have to kind of think, where would that go? How would I display it? What would the size be? You know, and so that's the thing that hampers me.
The stuff that I've got are like, you know, the gigantic Matrix Squiddy with all the tentacles that are posable.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
And do you ever see the Max?
Yeah.
I actually found Izzes.
They made those.
Izzes.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, the little...
Those, Minions, Transmetropolitan, the Two-Faced Cat, you know.
Nice. Hey, Mark, you would be very proud of this. You mentioned cowboy figures. I remember owning some cowboy, little plastic cowboy figures. They had some Indians in there as well, horses. But there was like a little corral ranch kind of set that I remember buying.
Yep.
I bought that. But my other interest, and you'll be very proud because I recreated this and I would play it all the time. My other interest were plastic dinosaurs.
Oh,
nice.
So guess what I would play, Mark?
Valley of Guanji.
we had a saying about Guanji in that movie, The Valley of the Guanji. There's a character named Carlos who does not hesitate to take on that pteranodon.
Right.
He leaps on that pteranodon and breaks its neck. And he is the toughest cowboy in that movie. He is a tough SOB. He's not that tough because Guanji yanks his ass off of that horse and eats him. But the saying that we came up with was like, if you're on something fast, really quick, we go, ooh, man, he was on that like Guanji on Carlos.
I'm going to use that.
That just became part of the house vocabulary, I think.
You could even use that in terms of being with a significant other. It's like, ooh, I'm all over you like Guanji on Carlos.
99.9% of America will go, what?
That's brilliant. And by the way, so the dinosaurs that I would have were not the little, they were the big, mm-hmm. like plastic model kits.
Yeah, the Revell model kits.
So they were huge. Mm-hmm. So you could actually stuff the cowboys into their mouths and stuff like that. It was awesome. I love playing Valley of Guanji, which, by the way, one of my favorite movies. But I have a question. So what's the first really amazing toy that you guys remember getting on a Christmas day? Unwrapping it, looking at it, going, oh my God, what's the first one you all have a memory of?
That's a good one.
All right, I can tell you that, of course, my parents would always set my playsets up, you know, for me until I was about 9, you know. They would, you know, build the Death Star for me. Mm-hmm. So when I walk in, it was ready to go, the Enterprise would be set up. And then I found out later that's because my dad wanted to play with it too.
Nice.
But the thing that I remember just flipping out over was, for some strange reason, I really, really, really loved the big track. That was the six-wheeled tank that you could program, and you really could program it.
I know that thing. It had like a calculator on the back.
It had a calculator on the back, and it was you could do up to 13 moves, and you know each move was you push a button, you know, forward, and then you push a number, and the number would be how many how many lengths it goes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it knew that it could roll forward about as one big track length of itself. They got me the towing trailer that went with it, because one of the actions that you could do was to dump the trailer. The commercial's terrible. The kid uses the big track to bring his dad an apple, and I'm thinking there's an efficiency issue here that we're not addressing. But because all I really wanted to do was to use the big track as a giant alien invading force that would slowly roll over my arm with impunity, you know. We can't stop it!
Or if you put a beer on the top of that thing, you were talking.
I remember when I took that thing off, I just kind of stared at it for a minute because I was awash in the possibilities. I was already programming it before it was even out of the box. That's a later memory, but that's definitely one that sticks with me as being one of those just like, you know, the lights coming down from the ceiling and striking the box, you know. So.
Yeah. And the box artwork was always very cool to see on those old 70s
toys. Yeah.
The little kids wearing their really cool turtlenecks and brightly colored pants and what have you, vests.
They all had a turtleneck and a vest, yeah. Those demented little incubi Star Wars packages.
That's right.
All these gap-toothed little lagomorphs. I don't know where they found those kids, man. They probably got them by the hour at some sort of Dr. Moreau petting zoo. Totally, you know.
Children of the Damned.
Yes, very much so.
Now, Earth 1, Earth 2. My parents would often build our playsets and put them up, and we had the Planet of the Apes treehouse, Mark, and we had the Planet of the Apes battle fortress, Mark. We had all those great things that were built and set up for us. I remember the Mad Monster's castle was one of my favorite things that was built and set up, and the monsters were out there on the castle in the turrets. Big monster fan, obviously. But I think for me, really, the one thing that Christmas morning came around the corner and there it was the Kenner Death Star. And my mother went mad and apparently felt we needed to have 12 stormtroopers, bought us 12, like an army, a literal army of stormtroopers, and they were all open and they were all in the Death Star. And there were two stormtroopers on the top, three on the second level, another couple on the bottom level. They were everywhere. The place was crawling with troopers.
Wow.
And the Death Star was so... it was, you know, your imagination as a kid. If you look at it, you're like, it looks really small and compact and not very playable. But as a kid, Luke Skywalker and Leia were swinging across the chasm there on the rope, and the trash compactor, the brilliance of the trash compactor and its little foam trash and the little, you know, what's the creature called? Somebody, anybody?
Right.
Dagobah or the...
I should be enough of a nerd to know this. Dianogu.
Thank you. Points. Very nice.
Thank you.
So yes, the Dianogu in there, and you would close the trash compactor, and it would squeeze them, and at the last possible moment, the door would pop open, and our heroes could escape, and there was a big gun, just like in the movie, there was that big gun on the top of the Death Star, and an elevator, and on the back of the elevator, the tractor beam, where Ben Kenobi could, you know, turn off the tractor beam, get the Falcon out of there.
It was a really efficient use of space, wasn't it?
Yeah. It really was, and that bridge would extend. The one that Luke and Leia would swing over, it would open and it would extend and you know, go back into its base. It was just hours of just staring at it and just being inside the Death Star, literally being inside the Death Star, going, wow, I'm in the Death Star. That's really cool, you know. And as a kid, you know, Star Wars stories, I know we put up sort of a moratorium on them, but they were such a huge influence on, I'm sure, all of us, that we, you know, it's hard to separate childhood from that memory of those Star Wars stories. Simple. Designs, sculpts, whatever. Sculpts, what is that? No, you know, who cares? That doesn't look anything like Harrison Ford. He looks like Harrison Ford after he got drugged by a truck. It does not look like Han Solo.
None of them looked like anything. And
no, yeah, they didn't. They were very generic.
Oh, yeah. Well, back then,
but you know what? It didn't matter. It didn't matter. I mean, that's how I got my first really good look at a Tusken Raider. I stared at that figure.
Yeah.
Really studied it. Oh, wow. That's an ugly thing. What is that?
It's an evil bear.
It's an evil bear.
Awesome.
Yeah, Death Star.
Aaron, did you have what was your like?
I have
thing?
Mine is actually similar to Joseph's in what it was not the actual a toy, but it was a huge diorama playset, and it was Batman's Batcave.
Ooh, Migo.
I don't remember what the brand of it was, but it was, I mean, it had the computer, it had, you could, you know, move them around, you can put them on an upper level where they had little banks of computers on the top.
And, maybe the smaller ones that Miko did.
But all I remember is that, like, I think it closed, you could unfold it, mm-hmm. and it came, because I already had a Batman and a Robin figure, which again, the toys back then, they didn't look that good, they had that ill-fitting clothing and such. But I got the Batcave, and it came with, they bought me additional, they got me Penguin, they got me Riddler, and I believe Joker. And I was just so, I remember opening it up and just thinking, wow, and immediately ran and grabbed my Batman and Robin and opened that up, and they're fighting, biff, pow, bam! Of course, all based on the TV show, mm-hmm. is when this was very, very popular. But that's the one that I remember being very excited. The other one that I remember playing with obsessively, to the point where I'd play it with myself, and it was not really very much fun, but Rock'em Sock'em Robots.
Ooh, yeah.
I got a Rock'em Sock'em Robots, and I would force everyone to play that to the point where they were so annoyed, they would just walk away from me. My sister didn't want to play anymore. My mom was like, no, go bother somebody else. I'm walking up to the housekeeper. Here, could you? No, I don't, no quiero. and so I'd sit there at the table, with one hand on each of the little punches, and just, you know, all by myself, you knocked my block off, which wasn't that much fun, but yeah, Rock'em Sock'em Robots, and then
I
believe that was it.
And how old were you?
It had the pole, mm-hmm. it had, yeah, I think that's
I'm showing him a photo of the Mego Batcave, because I want to make sure that
it had to have been Mego,
that's it.
And how old were you?
With the Rock'em Sock'em Robots?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh gosh, that was in the 70s, so I was probably like, I don't know, 8 or 9 or so.
Okay.
I mean,
the same age kid at a convention that I was recently at was bugging the crap out of his father, who was trying to run something there, and everybody else he came across to play a very complicated board game.
Oh.
Kids these days don't know.
Yeah.
And they should get off my lawn.
That's right. Stop taking my pecans, you little savages. Those are my pecans. When you mentioned Rock'em Sock'em Robots, for some strange reason, I immediately flashed on the Evel Knievel.
Yes.
Those action figures, because there was this kind of weird thing in the 70s about this notion towards making more realistic play. The heroes had to be real people. I owned this figure, and only one other person I know ever owned one. Did either of you ever have J.J. Arms?
No.
J.J. Arms.
J.J. Arms was based on a real live private detective who had hooks for hands.
I know the detective.
He's based on a real person.
Wow.
Yep.
I had an Evel Knievel with the whole wind up thing for his bike, but no, I never had J.J. Arms.
Well, and so what they did for this guy is, in addition to, like, he came with hooks that had a little spring in them that you could push, and they would open and close like actual prosthetic hooks. But that, I guess they didn't think that was enough of an action figure. So both hooks were detachable from his wrist, and you could put different action hands on. And one of the hands was a magnet that you could stick him to the fridge. One of the hands was a hook that held a gun. And apparently this was based on a real thing that he had. He had a hook hand.
Did he have a plunger on the end of a rope?
He might have, for all I know.
Popular.
A-A-R-M-E-S, I think is his name. J.J. Arms, yeah.
J.J. Is there a connection? J.J. Abrams?
Probably
not Abrams, no.
But the idea was the company that made Evel Knievel and J.J. Arms. He was billed as the world's greatest investigator. That was his thing, you know.
But the most unlucky SOB ever,
right?
Because apparently,
and you will be pleased to note that not only does he have lifelike '70s action hair, molded in sort of that sort of weird bell shape, but he also came with a turtleneck and a vest. So
wow, very nice.
Yeah, it's worth googling him just to see the toys.
Absolutely.
They're really interesting.
Yeah.
Did Evel Knievel come with like a hospital bed and traction?
Especially with what we put him through.
Because that was the best thing about those was that those toys, the motorcycles, were high density plastic with rubber wheels, and I would crank that thing up until my arm hurt, and then I would let go of it, and it would run. And they'd go half a block, mm-hmm. and then they'd skitter under a drain pipe and get caught on a rock. And he'd go flying, and you'd pick him up and just dust him off. I mean, they're basically Evel Knievel was a bendy that you would stick on the back of this thing and just watch him flail about as you throw him off the roof.
You install an accelerometer on it with a parachute, and when he goes airborne, as he starts to come back down, it triggers the parachute.
You know, if there was a voodoo doll component to Evel Knievel, the guy would have never made it out of the 70s. We would have collected. Killed him 30 minutes into Christmas Day, 1976. He's just woken up and his arms are flying off and his head's all of a sudden on the floor. And
we used to launch him off the roof. And I remember the figure came with, and I will quote the ad, with a swagger stick.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
A swag stick. It was like a mini cane that you could put in Evel's hand so he could swagger up to the bike before he got on to do this great stunt, whatever the heck he was going to do. He came with a swagger stick.
That was what it was actually called. That was the actual accessory.
Oh, my God.
It was basically a little – it was like a pimp cane is what it was.
It was.
Well, a swagger stick is a real thing.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, when you think about it, a cane for Evel Knievel makes a lot of sense.
Oh, yeah. I'm
noticing more years than not having a cane.
I'm noticing that nobody has mentioned anything about, you know, strapping action figures to Estes rockets and launching them up into the sky.
Oh, no, I tortured mine horribly. I thought we would not talk about how we destroyed our toys. Because the whole nine yards, set fire to my G.I. Joe, everything. So, but, yeah. I punctured the hell out of Stretch Armstrong because I wanted to see what was inside.
Yeah.
Those are dark. Maybe we'll have a show about that after Christmas.
Confessions and
toy
confessions
show.
I didn't do anything horrible to my character figures because they were characters. But I would blow up model planes and Battlestar Galactica Colonial Vipers. I'd blow the heck out of those things because that was pretty cool. And I did take my mummy action figure and wrap him in real bandages. And bury him in the backyard.
Soaked him in kerosene and lit him on fire.
Yeah. I don't know. Oh, gosh. You know, we were going to talk about this, but my sister, I don't know how my sister convinced me that it would be fun to light my G.I. Joe's head on fire. Because she wanted to see if his hair would burn. Well, yeah, it did.
What do you know?
And so then I'm like, well, I'm mad. So I'm like, well, we have to do something to your Barbie. She's like, no, we're not going to do anything with Barbie. And I was so mad, I took scissors and I just cut all of Barbie's hair off. So, yeah, so she looked like Barbie burn victim, basically.
Punk rock Barbie.
I was not that kid that I didn't play too roughly with my figures, but they did get damaged just for the normal wear and tear. Stretch Armstrong, of course, you know, it's made of rubber and corn syrup. There's a limited life expectancy there anyways.
Yeah.
And it almost makes me think planned obsolescence was part of the gig, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You got 10 stretches, and then all of a sudden he's bleeding red corn syrup. And it was red corn syrup.
I know.
I did not puncture mine until he pretty much had stopped working. He was starting to get stiff.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, all right, let's see what's in there. Oh, wow, there's that in there.
He's bleeding. Mom, he's bleeding. Gentlemen, I'm afraid the lounge is giving me last call. I know. The time flies. So I think to wrap up, let's look to the future. Let's look to what's on the toy aisles today. And if you can, if you have, and I'm sure you have, as you wander through your comic book stores or your toy stores, I know I do, I always make a detour through the action figure aisle.
Sure.
Not dolls, action figures, and see what's there. What struck your fancy? What would you like under the tree new if you could have anything?
Wow, that's a good question. I'll tell you one thing that I didn't get as a kid, because at the time that I was a Star Wars fan, the lightsabers had not developed. You know, they had a flashlight with a balloon that blew up, and then they later for the Empire Strikes Back they made a plastic one that had a hollow tip, and when you waved it, it made the woo 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 noise.
Right.
Nowadays the lightsabers are really cool, and so
they're awesome.
The thing that I missed, I should have bought it when I had the chance. I almost bought it for my mother one Christmas because she's a Jedi Knight. We call her Yoda. Was the lightsaber construction kit that came out during the special edition. And right.
I remember those.
Because you could just basically build your own lightsaber. I want a lightsaber. I want a really cool toy lightsaber. I never got one, and that's one of those totemistic fetishes that I've always, you know, I consider that to be it's the weapon of the Jedi. It's the mark of a Star Wars fan. You know, you got to have your own lightsaber. So that would be my if I can have anything under the tree, that's what I'd do.
And by the way, I talking about kids these days, they don't understand when my parents came home. It was shortly after Star Wars had opened. And it wasn't even like an actual licensed toy. It was somebody got a flashlight and they put a long plastic tube on it that was lined with whatever reflective material it was. And you turned on the flashlight and the tube lit up. That's all it did.
Yeah.
And it was just white. She came home from the store with it. I had already fallen asleep. She comes into my room. It's dark. And of course, she's trying to do the lines, and she doesn't know the lines, so she's like, you know, Aaron, I am a robot, whatever she was saying. And she turns this thing on. And of course, to my young brain, I'm looking at this, and I'm going, oh, my God, look at this thing. It's wonderful. And I immediately leap out of bed, and I let me see it, and I'm waving it around. If she had walked in there, When I was that age, with today's like lights up, I would have died. I would have lost.
Yes.
I would have died. You know, they would have. I would have woken in the hospital
with no memory of what happened. Yeah.
No, I can't imagine having a toy like that when I was first watching. But so the toy I really really want. I'm actually in my early years I was not a Lego fan. I actually like Legos a lot now. I really would love one of those huge, huge Lego Millennium Falcons.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I would like. I would like that built. I want to build it. I want to set it somewhere to display it. Yeah. It's a gorgeous
thing. It really is.
And that's what I want.
Yeah, pay the price for it, but it's
beautiful. Yes, it is not cheap.
Yeah, yeah. Mickey?
They stole everything already.
Oh, sorry.
Oh man, I'm sorry.
Dupe
up, so we're good. Yeah,
I've got to get creative because we're talking toys here, and everything I've been wanting for Christmas is electronic.
A toy?
Yeah, it could be a toy.
That counts.
PlayStation 4?
Exactly. PS4's can.
Yeah.
Boba Fett helmet, because I've always loved the design. It's none of this, you know, like I'm not cult of Boba Fett or anything like that. I just like the Fett. I just like the Mandalorian armor. So
yeah. I've been on the hunt for this for, you know, months, it seems, since the toys were first released, since the Force Awakens toys were first released. I'm desperately trying to find myself a little Captain Phasma.
I knew it.
Yeah. Now, mind you, finding a little Captain Phasma is really impossible because she's gigantic, but I want that 6-inch, the Black Series Phasma.
Yes.
That's what I want.
Because
Disney does an exclusive one that's die-cast metal and articulated. But it's not as articulated as the Hasbro Black Series that apparently just impossible to find. They're gone. They're just zip gone.
Right. Yeah.
And every day when I go into a store or I go into the grocery store, I go anywhere that has a toy aisle, I'll check. I will check.
Yeah.
So that's my quest right now. I want to find a Captain Phasma so that I can gaze at her lovingly.
They do have a little super deformed, what are the Funko, Fun Pop?
Yeah.
Captain Phasma.
I just I want it for my desk at work, quite frankly. I want to put her with a gun with her gun in her hand and have that swagger, maybe look cock her hip a bit.
Made a joke before you said anything, saying it was gonna, and then I didn't, because I would have stolen your thunder.
I promise, Joseph, if I find that Phasma figure, I will buy it.
Yeah,
for
I'll keep an eye out, man. You never know.
Yeah, and this, you know, you never know exactly. And I always like haunt the most obscure places, like your HEBs, your grocery stores that have a toy aisle. Sometimes they have gems hidden in
they
there.
Do.
Oh,
they
what's
do.
What's that doing here? You know,
Walgreens is a good one for that, because they seem to have a lot of Star Wars stuff, but it's random.
I totally agree, gentlemen. The lounge is closing for the holidays, and the gentlemen are going their separate ways. So join us again in the new year as we lounge and talk about nerdy things near and dear. Happy holidays to you all.
Merry Christmas and happy holidays.
Cut, print,
nothing.
And we're good. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I thought you guys were going to give a goodbye.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Joyous Kwanzaa, or something.
I know, we all got it. That's good.
Okay.
That works.
All right. All right.
Gentlemen Nerds is a production of Cloak & Dagger Studios, LLC. Music by Ben Gibbs. The sound editor is Michael Ashley Finn. Web design at thegentlemannerds.com by Rustix Interactive. Promotional consideration by the Island of Lost Toys Tourism Board.